Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. And today on the Voices of Courage, we're addressing one of the most urgent issues facing our nation, the future of education. Across America, parents are concerned. Teachers are overwhelmed. Students are disengaged. Costs continue to rise. Yet measurable academic outcomes remain stagnant or declining. We're facing serious questions. Why are we funding systems instead of results? Why are students graduating without mastery in core subjects? Why does innovation move faster in every other sector except education? Our current model largely funds audience, compliance, and infrastructure. I should say attendance. But education is not about buildings. It's not about bureaucracy. It's about learning. So today, we're exploring a bold shift. What if public education funding were tied to demonstrated student mastery instead of seat time? What if accountability moved from regulating instruction to rewarding outcomes? What if innovation were completely integrated into the system instead of constrained? In our conversation today, we are going to really explore some of the structural flaws in the educational system. We're going to talk about high performance-based models that can really realign this whole system with incentives. And so much more. So today I have a very special guest on my show. He's a former senator from Idaho, and he's going to be with us in just a moment. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. Stephen P. Thane. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ken. It's nice to visit with you again.
Well, let me give a little introduction to you for those that may not know you. Stephen represented District 8 in the Idaho State Senate from 2012 to 2022. Prior to his service in the upper chamber, he served in the Idaho House of Representatives from 2006 to 2021. During his tenure in the legislature, Stephen Thane was known for his leadership on education policy, including his work as chairman of the Senate Educational Committee and as the author of key initiatives such as the Advanced Opportunities Program and the Self-Directed Learning Law. He currently serves as chairman of a career in technical educational charter school that blends face-to-face instruction with hybrid online model focusing on workforce skills for the students. You know, it's awesome to have you on the show. And, you know, we haven't done this for a while, but you've been doing deeper and deeper dives into this educational crisis that we have in our hands. You want to talk a little bit about that today?
Yeah, I'd love to do that, Ken. I should, and thanks for the introduction. I think it's important for people to realize that I was a public school teacher. I taught Spanish at a high school. So I've been involved in public education from the perspective of how we can improve it. But I come at it from the idea that the greatest need of public education is having parents taking ownership of their own kids' education. So all of the ideas that I had were built around that principle. What can we do to give parents and students more choices? Because as they have choices that they choose, significant choices, then they take ownership. One of the laws that I got passed turned into the Advanced Opportunities Program, which in Idaho has almost 50% of the students in secondary school participating, at least by the time they're sophomores and juniors. And many of these students are graduating with an associate degree. They took hundreds of thousands of college classes while still in high school. But the whole idea was to allow them to have choices that that they had that would impact their own personal lives. So,
well, let me ask you this. You know, you've done a lot in education, and it's, you know, there's a lot to do. But, you know, why are we still funding systems instead of results? I don't get it.
When Horace Mann first established public education in the 1850s, kind of the current model that we've inherited, so this is 180 years ago almost, He thought that the problem was parents, and the solution was to have the state take responsibility to choose the curriculum, to train the teachers, to do the teaching, and the only responsibility left with parents was to fund it. And so he was thinking that this front-end approach of training teachers and having school buildings and the right curriculum was the way to go about it. And so we've just built on that system over the last 150 years. And no one's, because a lot of people's incomes, their salaries are based upon this old model, it's very difficult for an institution as large as public education to change.
Well, unfortunately, it's kind of a one system that's supposed to fit everybody into it. And, you know, we got a lot of individuals out there. I mean, there's other models out there, Montessori and Waldorf and, you know, a lot of different models that have worked really highly effectively. I'm just wondering why we haven't included that, you know, in our system. And the reason I say that is because there's so many kids now that are totally disengaged. They don't want to attend school. You know, COVID was a big shutdown for so many children that, you know, were forced to learn online, and a lot of them didn't learn online. A lot of them didn't get their degrees. I mean, they didn't even get a high school degree. So I'm just, you know, the system seems a little broken to me.
And I think that lack of, because there are some students that are doing wonderful in public schools, and at least in Idaho, there are a lot of choices, both outside of public school and in public school. So, but there are still a lot of students that are disengaged. They're more passive learners. And so I've thought, well, what could we do next? What would be the next step? And I hate to get too historical or philosophical for people, but public schools have been forced to adapt as people have had opportunities to leave. First, you have private schools. Then you had homeschooling that has become very popular in many parts of the United States. And then the charter school movement. And so as the public school system has had to face this competition, they're starting to be a little bit more flexible. And I think that's what they really need, is some nimbleness. So I'd like to share with you, if I could, Ken, what an idea that might even push public schools into making more changes.
That sounds good. Well, let's do it.
Okay, so the basic idea is we fund inputs, just like you said. We fund teachers, we fund schools, curriculum, bus drivers, lunch ladies, counselors. There's no amount of inputs that we can't fund. And one reason that there's so much regulation on these inputs is because every system needs accountability. So what I thought is, well, why don't we fund learning? Now, I don't think the system is ready to make that jump right now, but parents might decide to take that responsibility. And if they take that responsibility and oversee their kids' education, either by teaching them at home or sending them to a private school or a micro school of their own creation, then they should access, I'm suggesting, 70% of the funds. So in Idaho, that would be about $6,000. In California, it'd be a little over twice that, almost $13,000. And so if a student was taught at home, for example, and they were able to pass a test or demonstrate in some way that they had learned the material they're supposed to learn that year, then the parents would have access to those funds. Now, what I'm hoping is that if this were to take off, that the public school system would say, well, we'd like to have some flexibility to compete. And I think that would be wonderful. Well, what this does is it starts incentivizing the students to find innovative ways to learn less expensively.
I have a question around that, because, you know, it's like, if you, isn't that the job of the schools to teach them how to learn? So what we're saying is, well, you guys aren't doing a good job. So what we want to now do is fund learning through the family, through the student. Is that what I'm hearing?
Partially. The reason that I'm suggesting that the family should be given this option is because I don't think that system is able to make this change yet. So families need to demonstrate how it would work, and then the public school system might adopt it. But our focus is on teaching in public schools, not learning. And so that's a fundamental shift. And the way you make that shift is you start rewarding those that figure out how to learn. And many students in public schools take that responsibility and do learn, but you talk about the passive students. They are not assuming that responsibility.
Yeah. So I want to take a little dive into that teaching versus learning. So we go to school. The teacher comes up, is going to teach me a history lesson about the Civil War, and they have their lecture prepared, and they give the lecture, and I'm supposed to learn that, but I don't learn that. So where's the breakdown here? What's happening here?
So let me give you an example of something that we're doing in my charter school. It's called the Payette River Regional Technical Academy. This year, we started offering academic classes in addition to our online or our vocational classes, and the academic classes are online. But one thing that we're doing is we're saying, you need to learn the standards in English that the state has set out. But you can, well, in this case, I want to use biology. Here's what you have to learn in biology. But this one student said, I'm really interested in horses, so I want to apply all of this biology class to horses. So it's something that they could sink their teeth into, so to speak. And so they're studying something they want to study at the same time the teachers are providing instruction that they can apply to their specific field of interest.
I like that a lot. I think that's accurate. I think that's where we need to go. So how would you get participation, you know, in this, if this were to take off? How would you get participation from the families? What would you be doing?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question. I've run this by a few people because originally, about 3 years ago, when this idea popped in my head, I said, this is really way too radical for most people. And I thought, over the last 2 or 3 years, this isn't radical at all. This is what we should be doing, at least providing an option for parents who wanted to do it. So my youngest daughter has 5 children. The oldest is in the second grade. He's almost 10. And she said, and her husband's going to school. And she said, if I could make $6,000 a kid, I would work with some parents or even homeschool, because it really greatly enhance their income. Also, public education, the way it's designed, takes a lot of time from families. For families who really want to spend more time together, this would give them the opportunity to go on trips and still study, to spend more time at home. I know so many parents have to work two jobs, so this isn't an option for them. But it could be if they're able to earn some money doing so. So,
I like that. Is this, like, let's say the $6,000 in Idaho, would that be per semester, per year? What is that?
That would be per year.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously, well, maybe it's not obvious, we're not doing that right now. So don't come to Idaho for that reason. But it is an idea I'm kicking around. And sometimes these ideas actually come to fruition.
Well, they do. I think it's a good idea, and I think we should explore it. I think what I'm hearing too, like one of my daughters has six children, right? So they get $36,000 while they're in California. They'd be at double that, right? So that would go directly to the family. They already homeschool their children, and so that would be an additional incentive to and give them the funds they need to really explore out a lot of different things. So, yeah.
It would. And what's one of the pushbacks I get from people is, well, how would you determine if someone's learned something? And what I respond to that is, you mean public schools haven't figured that out yet? I mean, so I sent this off to one of the teachers at our school, and she's quite into innovative thinking. It's one reason I like her. And she says, well, I think one way we ought to go back to the Iowa Basic Test for students that want to do this, because it actually tests knowledge, not your ability to take tests. Because some of the tests we have now are more about the frustration levels. It measures frustration levels rather than actual knowledge. And she's mentioned a couple other tests like the Axios test and that I'm not familiar with. But I think there's a way to do it. And you would do something different kindergarten through fifth grade than you would sixth grade through 12th grade. It would look differently, but
Well, I love the idea. Listen, I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to explore different ideas around the educational system. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, of course, Ken B. Foster. It's so glad you're joining us today. I want to recommend that you go right now, if you're on YouTube, and click on our YouTube button down there to subscribe so that you don't miss any of our shows. And if you are new to the show, we encourage you to go over to youtube.com/@thecouragenetwork. And you can subscribe there and get all of our shows. So we hope that you'll do that. All right, back to my guest. Steve, you are now running. I don't know where you get time to do all this, but you're now running for the Idaho State Republican Party chairman. And this really ties into this educational discussion, because I know you're running on a platform to really take education to a completely new level. You want to talk a little bit about that? And, let me just ask you why. Why are you running for this office?
Well, that's a good question, why I'm doing this. So this is an office that the voters don't vote for. You have precinct elections, which is in the primary, and I know it's in May. And then we meet the next month in the state convention, and the delegates choose the leader of the leadership of the party. But Idaho right now is quite divided, the party is. And I believe that the Republican Party is our best tool in the political realm to have limited government, promote, you know, constitutional principles. And we're most effective when we're united. When we're not united, the people who aren't that interested in politics, the moderates, I guess some of them are, but the independents, they don't really see much difference between us and the Democrats because we're all fighting and we're not really providing a vision. So I'm running on three basic things: unity, priorities, and messaging. So unity, what that means is what unites people in the Republican Party is a belief in eternal laws, natural consequences, things that we can't change simply because we pass a law. There's laws of cause and effect like gravity and economics and, you know, so it's just not a religious context. But that's the idea of that is what unites us. We don't have to agree on what it looks like, but we have to agree that we're discovering something. We're not inventing it. The second thing, God knows the answers to all of our problems right now. And the way we tap into that is the third thing, the third principle, which is the way we tap into this divine inspiration is we have to listen to our fellow man, respect them enough to understand what their concerns are. We need to know what our concerns are. We need to share them in a respectful manner and try to come up with a solution, you know, a civil law solution that addresses both of our concerns. So it's just a respectful conversation. And interestingly, I had an event the other day where it is a Lincoln Day. And so the people running for office get up and they discuss, you know, why they're running. And one of them started calling his opponent a rhino, actually called him a Democrat. And I thought, they let me speak last, which is really nice. And so I got up and I said, you know, this is what we can't do if we're going to try to find these solutions is call each other names. And afterwards, I went and talked to the gentleman who I was talking about. And we had a wonderful discussion. I told him what he did right and some things he could improve. You know, it's about building each other up. And I think I can model this behavior. So that's one reason I'm running.
Yeah. Well, I like that a lot. And, you know, I think that piece that you just talked about, though, you know, it's like, you know, we got a divided country and, you know, very polarized in so many ways. And yet, you know, there are simple solutions. We stop, you know, attacking one another, criticizing one another, calling us names, whatever those names may be, because we've heard them all now on the media. And be able to, you know, like you said, you know, well, let's just have a conversation of two individuals. Let's bring some wisdom instead of emotion to the discussion. And I think that that can go a long way to helping us find solutions to the biggest challenges that our country faces right now. And, you know, one of that really is education. And, you know, from my point of view, you know, I've got, you know, I'm just the guy out here. I've got, you know, 12 grandkids. They're all, you know, different levels of, you know, schooling right now. And, you know, they come to me for, you know, and their parents, you know, for the wisdom, which is a good thing. But, you know, our schools, are just, you know, there's a lot of good school teachers out there. Don't get me wrong. I know a lot of great school teachers out there, and they're trying to do their best. But they're trying to do it within a system that really constrains, I think, them and their ability to take children and really teach them how to think. I personally went through, you know, 9 years. I was held back in second grade. I went through 9 years of primary school, and then I went through, you know, 4 years of high school. When I got out of high school, honestly, I really didn't know how to think. And it was only in college when I started taking some courses with some professors that and classes that I really enjoyed, that all of a sudden my creativity started opening up, right? And they did a great job. By the time I got out of school, I opened a business, right? Instantly, right? They did a great job, you know. But I don't know if we have that so much. And I really think we got to focus on that. I like the fact that Idaho is really one of the states that are leading the way, and you're part of that. In you know, I know we had the high school program that you gave them X amount of dollars. How does that work up there?
Well, it's called the Advanced Opportunities Program, and what it does, it provides $4,500. It's an in-school voucher, basically, that they can begin using in seventh grade, through the 12th grade.
Yeah.
So in seventh grade, they can start taking summer classes, high school summer classes, by the way, like a history or an economics, or they can take overload classes, which is more classes in a day than what the school offers. They can take dual credit classes. And every time they take one of these options, then funds are deducted from their total. So we had 600 or 800 students graduate with associate degrees last year. I don't remember the number exactly, but a lot of them are going to college. They're getting master's degrees because they they go with 2 years of college already. They finish in 1 year. In fact, a parent was just telling me that their child finished college in 1 year after high school, so they went after their master's because they weren't ready to leave yet. But this allows them to take ownership. Choices allow people to take ownership. And so the second thing I'm basically bringing to this party position, because I think you're right, education is the key, is priorities. Republicans oftentimes talk about the economy, taxes, which they do a great job on that. But they've been hesitant to talk about education, healthcare, poverty issues, and how to do that. And so that's where most of the money is spent at a state level on those three issues. Of course, you've got transportation, but a lot of that is...
Why is that? Why is that? Steve, why don't we talk more? I mean, I don't see any of these discussions on the media, mainstream media. I don't see us talking about poverty. I don't see us talking about education. I don't see us talking about, you know, much of anything except, you know, very limited topics.
Well, here's the reason. And I'm actually making my next YouTube video, The Political Mechanic is where you can find it, on this, and it explains why Republicans in Idaho have a supermajority, but why aren't they really reducing the size of government? Well, the answer is pretty simple. These programs were designed decades ago, many of them by liberal Democrats, and they're managing the outside edges, and I'm saying they need to retool them. Retool them by giving people choices, like what we're doing in education, and have lifetime limits and different things like that. The Republican approach to poverty is to help people become productive. So you give them opportunities. And the Democrat approach is more, we'll provide things for you in your time of need, which has a place, but it can't turn into generations. And that's what's happened.
That's what's happened. Yeah, because there actually is you make a good point. There is a need for both. I mean, you know, people need a hand up sometimes, and, you know, we want to be there to give them that hand up. But the hand up doesn't last, like you said, generations. And that is an issue. And that's now built into a system. And it seems to be very difficult to dismantle systems. So maybe we enhance systems. Maybe that's the way to go.
Well, I call the strategy the off-ramp strategy. You have lots of off-ramps in California. An off-ramp is basically allowing a choice if someone wants to take the responsibility. The accountability is a little bit different if because you want results. And if they take the choice, like this education idea, You want to see your kids get educated? You'll have access to funds if you can prove you did the work, you know, that your children are learning. So we could do something similar with the Affordable Care Act, for example. You could allow people that to have a high deductible policy that isn't ACA compliant if they take that responsibility themselves. And maybe they could get a $25,000 deductible because they have, you know, $25,000 in the bank. The premium would be a lot less. You just provide options. Off-ramps are options. And so the next thing, I'm running for chairman, is messaging. I've been working in this space for over 20 years, and there's a way to message it. It's not about cutting taxes. That will come secondarily. It's about building up people rather than institutions. If the people are built up, you don't need as much government. So it's a two-tier process, and too often Republicans are going to want to go to the jugular vein and cut taxes. Yeah. Well, I think that's putting the cart ahead of the horse.
Well, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to go down that line of funding individuals versus institutions. I want to take a little deeper dive into that. So we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I am speaking with Stephen Thane, who is currently running for the Idaho State Republican Party chairman, and funding institutions versus funding individuals. We have been funding institutions for a long time around here, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we have children that come out of school that can't read, that can't write necessarily, you know, on any kind of a real proficient level. We have individuals coming out that really haven't learned how to, do mathematics, reading, writing, mathematics. But more importantly, even than that, well, I don't know if it's more important, but it's on par with it. We have children coming out with financial illiteracy. We haven't taught them about finance. We haven't taught them about life or life purpose. We haven't taught them about, what values are in the United States, what we hold. I mean, it's interesting that we haven't taught our children so many things that they really need to just get along in life.
That's true.
I'm not saying all of them. Obviously, some children thrive in this system.
Yeah.
But others, we're getting a larger and larger population that doesn't thrive.
Well, and you said something earlier that there's a lot of really great teachers in the public school system. And sometimes people might misunderstand what I'm saying in criticizing the system, but they're limited by the system also. They need flexibility. But the greatest need of parents, of teachers, is to have supportive parents. And it should be a partnership between parents and teachers. And that is broken down in some areas. Well, the way you grow, you build people is because that's what I'm trying to do. And that's what I'm trying to take the Republican Party is to recognize that we're trying to build people, not institutions. There's two things. One of them, give them choices. Now, they don't have to take them, but give them the opportunity to take a choice. And the second is let them experience the consequences of their choices. That is one of the great failures of modern America is we have so many compassionate people that want to help someone who's struggling before the person struggling recognizes they need to change, if in fact they do. Some people are, it's not their fault. But if you are, you're doing something that is causing your problems to help someone before they're willing to change is enabling. And that's, we do that much too often. So it's a two-part strategy. Allow choices and allow exposure to consequences, both positive and negative.
Yeah, I think that's the way. And, there's a lot of children that go to school today, and I don't know what the percentage is, but, you know, they're sitting in the classroom and they're taking subjects that really don't, they can't see, there's no future in learning that subject. It's like, well, okay, I want you to learn about this. And they're completely bored because they're very smart kids and they're sitting there and they're like, well, I can't see. I don't know why I'm have to memorize this. I don't know why I even have to learn this. And a lot of that, I think, stems from the fact that they weren't given choice. They're put in a system where it's basically, this is what you will learn. And it's about, this is what you'll learn, this is what we will teach. And it's not about, well, I'm really excited about learning this. I think there's just a breakdown with that. I think choice is one of the keys to this. And the more choices that a child has, I think, these children are very, very brilliant. They're very bright. A lot of them know what they want. And, you ask even a four-year-old, what do you want? They'll tell you. You know, so we do need more choices in the educational system. We really do.
So one of the things that, one reason I'm the chairman of this Career Technical Education Charter School is we are allowing students to graduate with a welding certificate, or several of them, with a business certificate, a medical assistant in our health occupations, culinary. They've got a food handling certificate from the state, and they're hands-on, real-life experiences. By the time a child is about 12, they need to be having, especially males, hand-on experiences with the real world. See how it actually works. And not every parent has the ability to provide those experiences. So focusing more on career technical rather than college. And some people will say, well, college is so important. But the fact is, there's a higher percent of students that earn a career technical education certificate, industry certificate, that go to college than students that go to high school but don't take vocational technical that go to college. It's much higher when they have these hands-on experiences. I visited with some students at a charter school, and they graduated both with a welding certificate and an associate degree. And I asked them, which was harder? And they said, oh, the welding certificate was harder than getting an associate degree, because some kids are really bright, book learning, and so they pick that up easily. But even the ones that don't do, everyone needs some hands-on experiences. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, they do, and if our high schools were designed just a little different, add more choices. College, isn't for everybody. You know, there's a lot of children that come out. They want to work with their hands. They want to, be in the earth and the ground. You know, they want to feel ground. You know, I mean, there's a lot of kids that love that. I love doing that. Of course, I'm educated and intellectual too. But and you're a farmer out there. We like to work with our hands and stuff. There's a lot of people that enjoy that. And I don't, I just wonder also, I'm just throwing this out there, does everybody need to go to college? I mean, is that, that seems to be kind of a push in the country, but I'm not sure that that's what we really need.
No, only about 30% of the people need to go to college. We have on-demand learning now. In fact, what I tell my grandchildren is, if you don't know why you're going to college, don't go. Figure it out first. So I have a dentist, I have a physician's assistant, I have some businessmen in my family. The number one thing that all of them use is communication skills, because they all work with the public, either in sales or in medical field. And some require college, some don't. But you do not want to go to college, take on a lot of debt, and then come out of college without a marketable skill, and then realize that you have a anchor around your neck and you don't know how you're going to pay for it, and you don't have a skill that anybody wants.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And yeah, I'll just plus that advice. If you're going into debt, you got to really understand, is the opportunities, the career opportunities that you're going into debt for, will they actually pay that debt back? And if so, over what period of time? There's a lot of people carrying a lot of debt right now, and that's not healthy for you as a parent or a child. It's just not healthy for the family, is what I'm trying to say, because it impacts everybody, and we need to stay away from that. So, all right, listen, I'm gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back with a wrap up, and wait to hear what Stephen has to say as we close here. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap this up, and this has been a very enlightening discussion. I think there's some new solutions out there that we can all do. We can all start to go to our legislatures, and everybody could participate in this. We can go to our schools, we can go to our teachers, we can talk to them about, how we can maybe do the educational system differently. I think, I'm hoping this conversation stimulated from my audience, Stephen, some creativity and getting them involved and realizing, yeah, we don't want to necessarily fund institutions anymore in the way that we've been doing it. What we really want is we want results. We want good results for our children. We want to have a healthy nation, a healthy family life. We want to connect more with our children and to help them to step up into greater ways. And we can do this if we all work together. So what final thoughts from you?
One, I guess, is one thing I didn't mention is the $6,000 that a student might get in Idaho. $2,000 would go back to the local school district to fund, fixed costs and different things and maybe pay for some testing. So I'm not trying to defund public education through this. The second thing, my perspective is that there are solutions to be discovered. I'm not necessarily inventing them. I'm trying to build individuals, particularly families, and I recognize that as important as institutions are, the longer they're around, the more likely they are to figure out ways to extract wealth from young families. So we have to be aware that institutions can get top heavy and start. And I think with Gen Z, they're getting frustrated because they're paying taxes for Social Security and taxes for everything else. And we need to recognize how tough their burden is right now.
100%. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being here. Yeah, very enlightening, very educational, and always appreciate you on the show. Thank you. And much success on the Idaho State Republican Party chairman. I can see you as an amazing chairman for this group. I hope that works out.
Thank you so much.